Okay, so today we're continuing in our series, Women in Tanakh, and I thought that a natural progression after last week of doing Rachel and Leah, we would continue with Dina. So I wanted to take a minute and just talk a little bit in background, just to keep in mind, you know, especially now we're learning these different stories in Chumash, in Tanakh, especially now pertaining to the Avos and the Imahos. It's very important to always remember, like, because we're going to have a lot of questions, and we've had in the past, but we have to remember who we're talking about. Remember that we're talking about the Avos and the Imahos, and literally, you know, they paved the way for us. Like we say, it said, "Say ukfosha haderach, go out and pave the path." Not only did they pave the path in terms of Matza Avos Liman Labanim, they went down to Egypt, we went down to Egypt, etc., but also they infused with us a certain spiritual DNA. So when we talk about them, we have to remember each person on their level, you know. You know, what's maybe accepted for acceptable for a 2-year-old or a 10-year-old, or, you know, we hold the person to a higher esteem if the person's, you know, an adult or perhaps a rabbi or a Rosh Hashiva, etc. So, you know, that being said, when we look at these situations, especially some situations which we're going to have questions about, and remember that, you know, it's not for us to necessarily judge the Avos and the Imahos, but obviously, if Chazal or the Mefarshim are going to teach us something or say they were punished for a certain reason, then there's certainly something that we can gain from it and that we can learn from it as well. Okay, so with that said, let's go to the story with Dina. And, you know, you're going to have a lot of questions, and probably when you leave, you'll have even more questions. That's usually how learning goes. You know, but what I'd like to try to do today is instead of just, it's not just a regular, you know, Chumash class that we'll go and we'll read the Mefarshim and, you know, we'll ask a question and have a lot of different answers, but I want to kind of try to develop a theme or something that we can walk out of one understanding of the situation, and obviously most importantly, as we know that the Chumash is Toras Chaim, to come out with some sort of lesson for us as we can learn, you know, from this story with Dina. So the first, really, there's not really much that we do know about Dina from the text. The first time we hear about Dina is in Parshas Vayetze in Perek Lamed. You know, we spoke last week about the story with the Dudaim, with the mandrakes, with Rachel and Leah. And after that story, the pasuk tells us that Leah conceives her fifth child and her sixth child, Vatahar Vatelid ben Chamishi Liyakov, Vatahar Od Leah Vatelid ben Shishi Liyakov. She had a fifth child, she had a sixth child, she had Yisachar, and she had Zevulun. And then after that, the pasuk says, pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vachar Yelda Bas, Vatikra et Shema Dina. And after having six boys for Yaakov, she had a daughter, and the daughter's name was Dina. And then it's after this whole situation that Hashem remembers Rachel, and then she too, the next universe is talking about Rachel having Yosef. Okay, so it's interesting because when it comes down to all the other Shvatim, there's always, when the mother names the child, there's a reason given for the name. However, when it comes to Dina, there is not a name written explicitly in the text. However, Rashi comments, he says, well, why was Dina called Dina? And it's and he says, Perushu Rabbeinu Shezana Leia Din Ba'atma Im Zezachar Lo Tehei Rachel Achosi Ka'achas HaShvachos V'Hispala Alav and Hefach L'Nekeva. Basically, Dina made some sort of calculation, a judgment in her mind, and she said, wait a second, I know there's going to be 12 tribes, there's going to be 12 Shvatim, I already have 6, and the Shvachos each have 2. That means there's 2 left. So if I have another one, that means there's only 1 left for my sister Rachel to have, and then she won't even have as many, she won't even be quote-unquote equal with the maidservants, and therefore, she davened, and it was switched in her womb from a boy to a girl. Which is just, you know, on a side note, the source, if you want to start talking about surrogacy, we're not going to talk about that today, but this is, you know, where it all stems from, the concept of surrogacy. But anyway, it's interesting to note that by the pasuk, by the birth of Dina, it does not say Vatahar, and she conceived, like by the other Shvatim. It just says that Vatele, that she had, that she had the baby. So either according to the Pshat, according to the Eben Ezra, he says actually that Dina was Zevulun's twin, which is the pasuk that precedes this. So therefore, it says Vatahar, and she conceived by Zevulun, so it doesn't need to say it again. But according to the Meshech Chachma, this is not the case. And in fact, it doesn't say Vatahar, she conceived, because where was Dina conceived? she was conceived in Rachel's womb, not in Leah's womb. And because of Leah's tfilos, again, interesting, last week we spoke about the power of Leah's tfilos. Because of Leah's tfilos, we have this switch, and now Dina is in Leah's womb, and Dina, and Leah has a girl. Okay, so we know that Dina exists, that Yaakov has these boys, and he has one daughter that we know of, this a girl named Dina, but not much else is said about her. And after this, you know, story with all the births, Yaakov is leaving Laban's house, and he goes and he's preparing to meet Esav. Okay, so then we move on in the text, and we're in Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayakam balayla hahu. Right? So Yaakov is getting ready to go to Esav, and he basically gets up and he takes his two wives and the two maidservants and his 11 children, and he crosses over this river. Obviously, we're talking about going towards Esav. So Rashi astutely asks, "Vidina hechan haisa?" But we know that Yaakov had a daughter also named Dina. So where was she? So what happened? Yeah, Rashi says, well, where's Dina? You know, we know Yaakov has a daughter named Dina. So what did Yaakov do? Yaakov hid Dina in a box. And he locked the box, and so when he traveled, Dina was hidden so that Esav would not be able to see her and perhaps, you know, desire her and want to marry her. And it is said that it's therefore Yaakov was punished because he prevented, you know, Dina from the ability of having this impact on Esav and perhaps returning him to a better state. Remember, we spoke about last class how initially Esav was supposed to be on par with Yaakov. They were supposed to be partners in creating Torah and mitzvot, but just two different drachim. But they were supposed to inherit together, accept the Torah together, be Yorish Eretz Yisrael together. So therefore, Yaakov was quote unquote punished for this act from preventing, you know, Dina the ability to impact on Esav. And therefore, what happens next in our story, in the text? We have the story of Shechem. Dina falls into the hands of Shechem. So now let's open up our Chumashim, the Perek Lamed Aleph. Let's just read it inside quickly. I think it's just important to, you know, get a sense of the text and what exactly is going on. And then we'll start with all our questions and hopefully try to develop some sort of mahalach and some sort of answers to all these questions. Okay, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. So Dina, the daughter of Leah, goes out, you know, the daughter that she bore to Yaakov, and she goes out to see the local girls. And she's seen by Shechem ben Hamor, who's the, you know, the head or the prince of the land, and he takes her, he kidnaps her, and he sleeps with her, and he mistreats her. But, you know, after this incident, he becomes deeply attached to Dina, and he loves her. And, you know, he tries to speak to her heart, to appease her, to talk to her. So Shechem says, you know, this is not enough. She says to his father, you know what, I want to marry her. You know, make it work out. You take care of what you need to. I want to marry this girl. And Yaakov had heard what had happened to his daughter, and his sons were out taking care of the sheep in the field, the cattle, and he's quiet until they come. Right? So Chamor goes to take care of this, and he goes to speak to Yaakov, and the children of Yaakov come back from the field when they had heard what happened. And they were upset about the situation. They were angry. They committed an outrage. You know, this is not done, to take a daughter of Yaakov against her will. So Hamor spoke to them saying, my son Shechem, he deeply desires your daughter Dina. Please, you know, give her to him as a wife. Chatnu osanu b'noseichem titznu lanu v'es b'noseinu tikchu lachem. Right? We'll make a situation. You give us your daughters, and you take our daughters for yourselves. V'itanu tishvu, and you'll live with us. V'aretz tielef nechem, and look, our land will be before you. Shavu sachru he achazuba. You know, live and possess it and trade in it. You know, our land is your land. Come on, we'll be together. We'll intermarry. Everything will be great. Vayomer Shechem el aviha ve'elachecha emtsachim be'enechem v'asher temu elayetim. Shechem said to her father and his brothers, "If I, you know, let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you want, I'll give you. No problem. Harbu elay ma'od, mohar umatan, ve'enak asher temu elay, utznuli esanar alisha. You know, increase the amount, whatever you want for the dowry, whatever you want me to give, I'll give. Just give me Dina to marry." Vayanu b'nei Yaakov es Shechem ve'es Hamor aviv b'mirma vayidabru asher timei es Dina achosam. So the sons of Yaakov respond, but they respond b'mirma. Rashi says b'chachma, with some sort of intelligence. Clearly, we're not dealing with straight people. You kidnapped and raped my, you know, our sister. They can't speak to them, you know, straight. So they speak to them b'mirma, because of what he had done to Dina, because he defiled their sister. We can't give our sister to marry an uncircumcised man. It's a disgrace for us. But, you know, I think we can work something out. And, you know, if you all circumcise, then we can take care of this. Right. Then we'll give our daughters to your daughter, to you. You'll give your daughters to us. Ah, we'll be one big happy family. We'll all live together. But, you know, if you can't fulfill this one condition, I'm sorry, we're going to have to take our sister. We're going to have to leave. So, you know, Hamor and Shechem agreed that this was agreeable to them, and he didn't delay at all because he so desired Dina, and he was, you know, obviously Shechem was quite powerful in his father's house. So now we come to the second part, right? Shechem and Hamor agreed, but they have to somehow convince the rest of the people of the city to all circumcise themselves. So they speak to the people and they say, right? These people, they come in peace, they're going to live in our land, they're going to trade with us, there's more than enough room for both of us. We'll give them our daughters and we'll take theirs. It's interesting. They're, you know, their master, they want to try to, you know, seal the deal. So when they speak to Bnei Yaakov, what do they say? It's all the powers on you. You take, you give, you. Now they're going to the people of Shechem, and they know they have to, you know, try to handle some sort of deal, and they switch it, and they say, look, you'll be in control. You'll give, you'll take. It's all going to be great. Right? Just there's one small condition, one small thing you gotta do, you know? Just have to circumcise yourself. And then, everything that's theirs, look at their sheep, their cattle, everything, it's gonna be ours. We just have to take care of this one small thing. So they consented and they all got a bris milah. So on the third day, when they were weak, when they were in pain, Shimon and Levi got up, they took their swords, they were secure because they knew that the people were weak, they wouldn't be able to fight back, and they killed all the men. So they killed everyone and they took their sister back. And the sons of Yaakov came to the, you know, all the corpses, and they plundered the city that had defiled their sister. At Sonam, at Bakaram, at Hamo Chamorehem, ve'er asher ba'ir, ve'er asher basadeh lakachu. They took everything, the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, everything. Ve'et kol chaylam, ve'et kol tapam, ve'et nesheyem shavu vayavozu. They took and they plundered the wealth, the children, the wives. Ve'et kol asher babayis. So they took everything. Vayomer Yaakov al Shimon v'Levi. So Yaakov turns to Shimon v'Levi and says, Akar temoti. Guys, you made a little bit of trouble for me. Lavishenu b'yoshev ha'aretz, b'knani b'prizi. We don't look so good now, you know, to the Yoshvei Haaretz, to the Knani and the Prizi, Vani Mitim Espar, and we're a few people. Vanesafo Laivaikuni, they're going to gather. They're going to be very upset about what happens, and they're going to retaliate. And Ishmaditi Ani Uvesi, and they're going to destroy us. Vayomru. So Shimon and Levi respond to Yaakov, and they say, Hakazone Yases Achaseinu. Should they make our sister into a prostitute, into a harlot? And then the story ends, and that's it. And we don't hear about Dina. We don't hear about the situation about Dina again. So now we have the background. We have the story. Let's go into the questions. I'm sure everyone here has a lot of questions. I have a few myself. Okay. So first of all, the pasuk starts. The parak starts off. Atetze le Dina bas Leah asher liyaldal Yaakov leros bevenos haaretz. Dina, specifically the daughter of Leah. Remember last class we spoke, it's very important about to notice in Tanakh how someone is referred to. Are they referred to Mrs. by their first name, by their nickname, the daughter of? It tells us a lot about who someone is. So why? Why specifically is she called Bas Leah? Rashi says, V'lo Bas Yaakov, Ella al shem yitziyasa nikreis Bas Leah. Sha'af hi yatzanit haita shenemar v'tetei Leah lekrato. So here, we have the famous phrase, like mother, like daughter. Why do we say Bas Leah? Well, we say Bas Leah because Dina was a yatsanit. She went out like her mother. Like the pasuk that we actually spoke, that we touched on a little upon last week with the story with the Dudaim. After she makes this deal with Rachel and she gives up the Dudaim for a night with Yaakov, she goes out to greet Yaakov, right? So, first of all, what's the meaning of this? Is the Torah describing this as something negative? I mean, it's very hard to understand that this would possibly be negative because Leah was going out to greet who? Her own husband! She's not getting dressed up and going out onto the street to pick up strange men. She got dressed up to go out and greet her own husband. And more than that, on that very night, the pasuk says, Vayishma Elokim et Leah. Hashem heard Leah, and Rashi explains that he saw Leah's deep desire to have more shvatim, and on that night, she conceived Yisachar. So, it can't be something, how can it be that this quality of yatsanit, of going out, is viewed as something negative when Leah was rewarded, she conceived another child, not only did she conceive, but she conceived Yisachar, who was, you know, of the greatest of Talmidei Chachamim, the Yodei Bina, they had this great knowledge, they were a very well-respected tribe. So, what does it tell us? What is the Torah telling us that Dina is Bas Leah? Additionally, after Shechem kidnaps and rapes Dina, the pasuk tells us in pasuk Gimel, "Vayitidbak nafsho b'dina bas Yaakov, vayahav es hanara, vayadiber al lev hanara, vayomer Shechem el chamor aviv leimor kachli es hayal dehazos leisha." It seems very strange. After this whole incident, he kidnaps her and he rapes her. You know, he develops these feelings of love for her and he wants to marry her. He already had his way with her. So this doesn't seem, you know, typical of a situation, you know, of rape. We look in Tanakh, we see the famous story of Amnon and Tamar. Amnon was obsessed with his half-sister Tamar. He desperately wanted to be with her. He arranged a whole scenario that, you know, he pretended he was sick and then he asked that she should come and she should feed him and he sent everyone out of the room and he raped her. And then after that, he hated her. He sent her away. That was it. Often in life when something's a taiva for us and we're enticed, after we stumble with that enticement, we become disgusted with it. Imagine this. Imagine, you know, kivyacha, we're on a diet and we had that piece of chocolate cake. Do I want it? Do I not want it? And finally I give in to that. You know, we eat the piece of chocolate cake. Do we usually we feel really bad about it afterwards? We don't feel so good. We've been struggling with this situation for a long time. So it's so strange that in this story with Dina, instead of, you know, a natural reaction to be, I had my way, you know, I fulfilled my desire, let me move on with my life, he loves her. He becomes attached to her. He wants to marry her. Then we continue on, and Yaakov hears about this horrible event that transpired with his daughter, and the pasuk says, "V'hecharish Yaakov ad Boam. He's quiet. You know, he's silent until the brothers come. A terrible thing just happened to his daughter. And he says absolutely nothing to Shechem and Hamor. I mean, out of all the reactions I could think of, a father reacting after his daughter is kidnapped and raped. I don't know about if I would pick silence in the top five or the top ten, or I don't even know. You know, why? And again, another question: what is the purpose of the bris milah? Why do they insist that the Anshei Shechem have a bris? Then we continue on in our story, and we have Shimon and Levi. They go and they kill the whole city of Shechem. And Yaakov is clearly upset, and he says it to them. And they respond, Hakazona yaseh achaseinu. Are they going to make our sister into a prostitute, into a harlot? And it seems that Yaakov just doesn't say anything. That's it. The story's done after there. Until we go to Parshas Vayechi, at the end of Yaakov's life, when he's addressing the Shvatim before his death. And he discusses with Shimon and Levi what they did with the people of Shechem. And therefore he concludes in their bracha, in Perek Mem Tes, Pasuk Zayim, he says, Achal kein b'Yaakov v'afitzein b'Yisrael. According to the Pshat, I'm going to divide them, I'm going to disperse them, so that they can't be together again and plot in such a manner, you know, as they had in the past, as they had with the city of Shechem. But there, Rashi explains that what does it mean, I'm going to spread them out? Shimon and Levi, I have a job for you. You are going to be the Sofrim. You are going to be the scribes of Klal Yisrael. You are going to be the Milamdei Tinokos. You are going to be the educators. The future of, you're going to go around. You're going to fix the Tashmishei Kedusha. The future of Klal Yisrael, of education, of Chinuch, is going to fall on your shoulders. I mean, it seems strange to me. Why would Yaakov place such a big responsibility on the shoulders of Shimon and Levi? What on earth does this becoming Sofrim, becoming scribes, and becoming teachers and educators have to do with the story of Dinah and Shechem? And, I mean, if anything, I would think that I wouldn't want such people to be the teachers. You know, they get upset, they become zealous, they overreact. You know, what happens if my child speaks out in class? So, again, what does this have to do with the story of Shechem, and why does Yaakov assign them this very important task? So I think in order to better understand the story, we have to go back to a little bit of what we discussed last week. We go back to the story of Leah, of Dinah's mother, right? We said last week that originally Leah was destined to marry Esav. We said, Shnei banim li Rivka, shtei benot li yesh alavan, gadol la gadol, v'katan la katan. It's a match made in heaven. Rivka has two sons, Lavan has two daughters, they're all twins, let's give the oldest to the oldest, and the youngest to the youngest, and that's it, great. And originally we said that they were all supposed to inherit together. It was supposed to be a partnership. It was supposed to be a team effort. However, Rav Goldbach says, but they had different jobs. V'tafkidam chalukim nechonu l'shneiachem, right? Rav Goldbach, we said in Zasufas Marachos, writes that they were just supposed to do this job together. However, you know, within this job, they had two different roles. There's two different pathways, two different quote unquote highways in Avodas Hashem. Yeshno Avodat Hapnim, Ki Ilu Hein Talmud Torah, Va'avodas Hatzfila. Right? You have this one path, which you call Avodas Hapnim, which was assigned to Yaakov, which is about staying in the base medrash and learning and working on Tzfila. And then Ulitzadze Sula Derech Avodah Nosefet. But then there's another job, Avodat Hachutz. Afu chatum bechatumat brit hakadusha, aval tzuratam mugbelet beisuk bedvarim shel chomer bedvarim shel geshem. Right? We have this concept of avodas hachutz, working on, you know, outside things, going out into the field, going out into the world. But this also is involved. This also is connected to the bris of kedusha, but it's a different venue in which you go outside and you're involved in the chumrius, you're involved in the gashmius, but you have to elevate it. You have to find the good. We call this kedushas hachomer. And so we have these two different jobs. And this job was assigned to Esav. Now, Leah was assigned the job together with Esav of avodas hachutz. This was the koach she had. She was a yatsanit, right? She was someone who would go out. Her place was not in the base medrash, but rather it was to go out into the outside world and elevate the chomer and find the kedusha, just as she was supposed to partner with Esav. And she had the ability to do it in the world around her, as well as with the people around her. She had within her the koach, the ability to bring out the good in others, bring out the good in the world, and bring out the good in Esav. So what would Leah do? She would sit at the crossroads, and she wanted to find out, you know, what was going on with this Bashert of hers, with Esav. You know, in his job as Avodas Achutz, it's a tricky job. Is he being successful? And when she heard that Esav was involved in terrible things, she couldn't handle the concept of ending up in the goral of a Russia. She couldn't handle her fate being that she would be destined to marry, you know, such a bad person. And so she cried. And the Pasuk tells us, V'inei le'arakos, her eyes were soft, her eyes were weak from crying. And we said last week again, it was her tefillot, it was the power of these tears and of these tefillot that changed the situation. And ultimately, Leah ended up marrying Yaakov and not Esav. So with this quality of being a yatzani, of the koach to go out and do this avodas hachutz, that she passed on to her daughter, Dina. Yes. Dina is Asher, the Pasuk says, Asher Yeldal Yaakov. She is the daughter of Yaakov. And therefore, she's part of Bnei Yisrael, she's part of Beis Yaakov. But her individual tchunot, her qualities, her characteristics were, you know, were acquired and also gained through her mother. The Lubavitcher Rebbe writes in his Likutei Sichos that while, yes, the father, you know, gives his seed to the, you know, to create the child, and that starts the process, the baby develops, you know, in, and, you know, that original, you know, those original cells specialize and develop for 9 months in the womb of the mother. In fact, we find that every Shevet's name was given to them by their mother. And each Shevet has its own unique explanation to what their name means. We know, ladies, that the name reflects a person's essence, who they are as a person. And their name, you know, shed light onto their particular qualities and their particular character traits, which were given by either Rachel or Leah. We know that even the children of the Shvachos were named by Rachel and Leah. So this quality of being a yatzanit, the ability to go out and to change the bad, to find the good and the kedusha in the mundane, Dina inherited from Leah. Dina had this quality, you know, so therefore Yaakov locking up Dina was considered a menias chesed, preventing a certain level of chesed, of kindness to his brother, because Dina had the same ability as her mother to bring out the good. And ultimately, she could have actually reformed Esav. She could have changed Esav. On a side note, we're still in the middle of her Mahalach. I just want to, you know, take a minute to talk about a little bit some of the answers as to why possibly Yaakov was punished. Remember, we said Yaakov on his level was punished for doing this. So one of the first answers that's given is Yaakov didn't investigate to see, maybe Esav has changed. Maybe Esav's not the same Esav when I left, you know, my parents' house so many years ago. So that's one possibility. The Saba of Sabaka says that they don't have a tain on Yaakov that he locked up Dina, but he should have at least felt badly that he wasn't able to help his brother. And for Yaakov, on his level, that is something that's quote-unquote punishable. And another answer given Rav Simcha Zissel, he said the problem was with the way he did it, right? Rashi says he closed the box and he locked it. You know, like when we left Har Sinai, we were criticized for running away like a child running away from school. It was the way in which he did it. Again, Yaakov Avinu on his level. But let's go back to our story with Dina and our Mahalich. So the Neruziel writes, in discussing Dina, he says, habitual tendencies cannot be repressed. Unless one channels them properly, they burst forth unpredictably, usually with disastrous results. This is who Dina was. She had this quality of yatzani. She had this koach to do the avodas hachutz. And so wherever she was in life, this came out because this is who she was. In fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe writes that Dina went out to be makariv benos haaretz, to talk to them, to teach them about monotheism. That was the reason why she went outside and that she went to mingle with these girls, because she wanted to teach them and bring out the good in them, because that was Dina's natural tendency. No matter where she was, that's what she turned to do. And even in this whole story with Shechem, right? Dina, the Pesukim don't say anything about what Dina did. She's passive, but she's able to have an impact even on him. Once he fulfilled his desire, did he become disgusted with her? Did he want to get rid of her like we would think a normal, natural reaction was? No, he was taken by her. He loved her and he wanted to marry her. Not only that, but he was willing himself to circumcise, and he was willing to convince his whole city to do the same. In fact, even though the people of Shechem deserved, you know, to die, in order to fulfill the will of Dinah, the people of the brothers made it that the people of Shechem would first circumcise themselves. What is a bris milah? A sign of a bris. It's a sign of a covenant with the Mishpachas Avraham. And even perhaps, maybe it's the first step in Geirus, in changing their life, in turning things around. This all stemmed from Dinah, from interaction with Dinah. And even more than that, the Benos Shechem that Dinah went out to bring in, to teach them, to bring them back to good, what happened to them at the end of the story? They were taken as part of the spoils of the war. What happened to them? They became the shvachos, they became the maidservants in the houses of Yaakov, for the children, for the shvatim. So they too, you know, had this opportunity to become close. Not we didn't speak about Hagar, but Hagar was also princess in Mitzrayim. And her father thought that it was better for her to be a maidservant in such a special house than to be a princess in Mitzrayim. So we see that it's not a negative thing, that they became part of now a family, you know, with these values that could help them bring about good in themselves. And this is really who Dinah was. And according to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, it's along the same lines, the same idea, that Yaakov was quiet in his reaction to this whole situation. Yaakov knew that he couldn't go and speak directly to Shechem, and he couldn't speak directly to Hamor and say, "You did something bad, I need you to turn over my daughter now." He knew that these were the types of people that you couldn't speak straight to. You needed to speak with a little bit of chachma, with wisdom, with a little bit of deception. But Yaakov was unable to do this. Why? Because Yaakov is the midah of emes. His essence is truth. He couldn't go against his tchunas hanefesh. He couldn't go against who he was as a person. And so he was left with one choice. Silence. He couldn't speak. He couldn't do anything about it. And so he waited for the brothers to come back. And this is what he intended, was for the brothers to speak to Hamor and to speak to Shechem. And the plan, as the Ramban explains, was that they should get a bris milah, and then when they're weak, they should just go and take Dinah out of the city, and that's it. So when Shimon and Levi got up and not only took back Dinah, but they killed the whole city, Yaakov was clearly very upset. Even though he knew that the situation necessitated some level of deception, he felt that killing the city was an act based on sheker, and which was the antithesis of the Torah, and which is founded on emes. And so therefore he was very upset. It was against who he was. It was against his nature. It was against his values. Just on a side note, again, according to the Rambam, the Maimonides, the Anshei Shechem actually legally require death. It wasn't just this rash thing that they did. This situation necessitated the death penalty, because although the other nations are not required in the 613 mitzvos, as we are, they only have the Sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach. They only have seven laws. However, when they transgress one of those seven laws, because they're so much more, you know, important, the basis of society and the foundation of human interactions, the punishment is much more severe. In fact, the punishment is death. And so therefore, when Shechem kidnapped, stole Dinah, and not only, you know, did they not react to that, but they were also required to establish courthouses and judge such a situation, but they just let the whole thing go down. And so therefore, according to Maimonides, they deserved the death penalty. They deserved this death. But back to what we were saying with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, he continues, Shimon and Levi answer Yaakov, and what do they say to him? Should we let this happen to our sister? We're going to let them make her into a harlot? And it seems that Yaakov doesn't respond, right? We don't hear any more of the story. But he answers later, we said before in Parshas Vayechi, when he says to the Shimon and Levi that you're going to be scattered. You're going to become the Sofrim, you're going to become the scribes, you're going to become the Malam de Tinokos, you're going to become the educators, the teachers of all Klal Yisrael. Because Yaakov saw that Shimon and Levi, more than any of the other brothers, were appropriate for this important job based on their answer of Hakizona Yaseh Sachosenu. Yaakov understood that they completely gave of themselves to save and to preserve the kavod, the honor of their sister. Yes, the other brothers were pained over what happened to Dinah. And yes, they did want to help her, and they did try to help her. But only Shimon and Levi felt the pain, as if it was their own. And it was their cry of, HaKizona Yaseh Achoseinu, how could this be done to our sister, that Yaakov was able to clearly identify that their actions stemmed from a deep pain for Dina and a burning zeal, a kanaos, that could only be put to rest after destroying the very city that allowed this to transpire. Only these types of people, the people that feel the pain of others as if it's their own, and they go beyond the call of duty, and they have this kinas Hashem, this great zeal burning in their hearts, these are the people that will be able to go from city to city, and to be moser nefesh, and to forego material possessions, to teach and spread the word of Torah. Yaakov's intention was not just to punish Shimon and Levi, but was to find an appropriate time and an appropriate venue for them to express their kochos, for them to express their tchunas hanefesh. And we see in Mitzrayim, what happens? Paro is trying to entice everyone, you know, to, that's how he started the Shibud. He wants to get them involved in this work. So he makes it very enticing. He's going to pay them a lot of money. He's going to be involved in it, right? What was the only Sheva that didn't get involved? Levi. Levi stuck to their mission of being involved in learning and teaching Torah. It didn't matter how enticing what Paro was throwing in them was. And so therefore, they never even got involved in the Shibud because they stuck to their job. They stuck to what they believed in. And therefore, Yaakov appropriately identified his children's tchunot. He identified his children's natural inclinations. And instead of trying to suppress them, he found an appropriate way for them to express them, for them to express who they are. So what happens after the story? Dina is very afraid, you know, who's going to marry her after this situation? And Shimon steps up and he promises her, don't worry, I will marry you. And also a child is born from this relationship with Shechem. And this daughter is called Asnat. And according to some, she was given up for adoption, or maybe she was sent away, but she was given this special necklace that said that she was from the Zerah of Yaakov. She was a descendant of Yaakov. And ultimately, obviously through Hashgacha, some of the Midrashim say she was taken by the Malach Michael down to Mitzrayim. And who was she adopted by? Aishas Potiphar, the wife of Potiphar. And we know that ultimately she marries Yosef. Asnat also inherited this quality of being a Yatzanit from Dina, and ultimately, obviously, from Leah. Because what was her life in Mitzrayim? It was involved in Avodah Sachutz. She was the wife of the Mishlam Melech. Her life was about politics. And not only that, she found her place in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was Ervas Haaretz. It was, you know, where immoral things were going on. It was her job to hold on to that Kedusha, to find the Kedusha in a place like Mitzrayim and to elevate it, to be involved in this Avodas HaChutz, which was the task assigned to Leah. It's interesting to note that when Yaakov gives the brachos to the Shvatim at the end of his life, the pasuk says, Mem tes pasuk chaf chet, kol eila shifte Yisrael, shnei masar vezos asher diber lahem avihem, vayivarech osam ish kevirchakto beirach otam, right? All these 12 shvatim, and Yaakov speaks to them, and he gives them brachos, and it says, ish kevirchakto beirach otam. And Rashi notes, it's very interesting, right? We go from ish, yachid, each person according to the bracha, barach otam. Then it becomes rabim. So probably in English we'd say the sentence is not in agreement. It has to either be singular-singular or plural-plural. So Rav Golvach in his Asufas Marachos, he writes that Yaakov started with the bracha, right? He started with the individual. He looked at each shevet, each kibir chato, each person according to their own blessing, according to their unique strengths, according to their unique qualities and their characteristics. He blessed them as unique individuals. But the purpose of these unique qualities was not for each Sheva to go home and close the door, Shalom Yisrael, but rather there was supposed to be some sort of greater good that they were supposed to contribute towards. And so Yaakov ends up the bracha in the plural form. As individuals, they have to channel their own unique individual kochos and towards the strength of the klal, towards the greater good. And Hillel is famous for saying in Pirkei Avos, "Im ein ani li mili, if I am not for myself, then who will be for me? Uksha ani li mani, but when I'm for myself, what am I?" And the Sfas Emes there comments on the Pasuk, and he says, if I am not for myself, then who's going to be for me? Meaning that each individual has their own unique kochos, their own unique talents, their own unique character traits, and their own unique job. And if I don't fulfill my own job, meanly, who's going to do it? No one else can do it because there's something very special that I can do that no one else can do. But k'shani l'atmi, but if I'm only to myself, if the only purpose of everything I do is only for myself and not for anybody else, mani, what good am I? What good is everything that I have? And so therefore, we see that every person has their own unique talents, their own unique strengths that they have to look into and to capitalize, not necessarily, not to suppress, but at the same time, they have to find some way to channel whoever they are and what's unique about them towards the greater good. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos writes, he who is born under the star of Madim will shed blood. If a person is born under this specific star, he is destined to shed blood. Rav Ashi says that means he'll be a surgeon, a thief, a slaughterer, or a circumciser. You see? You could be a shochet, you could be a surgeon, you could be a thief, you could be a mole. You could, there's so many other, there's so many things that you can be. But when you have a certain quality, when you have a certain tzchunat ha-nefesh, when you have a certain inner strength or drive or inclination, you have to find the appropriate way to channel it. And you could do a lot of good with it. It's not like, I'm drawn to blood, so I have to keep myself in a box and not be involved in things. No, I can very much help people if I'm going to be a doctor. I can become a mole. I can become a shochi. There are a lot of positive things that I can do with who I am. And that's really our task. We have to discover what our tchunot are, what our inclinations are, what our characteristics are, not to suppress them, but to channel them. Obviously, in the framework of Avodas Hashem and to benefit Klal Yisrael. So we have to understand our personal bas leya. What did we inherit? What are our special qualities? But at the same time, remember that we're part of Beis Yaakov, that we're part of this greater picture of the nation of Israel. It's very interesting. In the summer, we spoke a little bit about this, but we all know this famous Gemara about the Zivug, right? That bas ploni leploni, 40 days before, before a person is 40 days before the vlad is developed, conceived, whatever, the voice, heavenly voice says, bas ploni leploni, you are destined to marry somebody else. Great. So we know everyone has a basher. But it's also interesting, if you read through the Gemara, it seems to say that there's almost like two zivugim. A person has two matches. What does that mean? There's a first choice, a second choice. Don't, if chas v'shalom, your spouse passes away, there's another option. Or if you get divorced, there's another option. What does it mean that you have two options? So I heard once from Rebbetzin Esther Wien that she says we're not talking about the classical shidduch of a boy and a girl, but rather we're talking about two different shidduchim. We're talking about the guf and the neshama. When we're up in Shemayim, Hashem decides which body is going to get which soul, meaning what characteristics the person's going to have, what strengths the person's going to have, what physical casing, what body is going to be able to carry and actualize those qualities. And at the same time, the second shidduch is where you're placed in this world. What community are you placed into? What time period are you placed in? What type of family are you placed into? And all of these things are divine, and they help us to understand who we are. We have to understand that we're endowed with special kochos and special things about us, and at the same time that we're assigned a special place, that we have the ability to impact the world around us and where we are and our family and our community and our time period, etc. And this is actually what Hashem asked Adam HaRishon. After Adam sinned, Hashem says to him, Adam, Ayeka, where are you? Was Hashem asking him for a point on a map? Adam, show me where you are, I can't find you? No, Hashem knew very well where Adam was. Hashem said to Adam, Ayeka, Adam, you sinned, you made a mistake. Where are you in terms of who you are supposed to be? Where are you in terms of your potential, in terms of your characteristics, in terms of your qualities, in terms of actualizing what you can do and who you can be? I heard a few weeks ago on Sefer Shemot, Rav Moshe Weinberger He spoke about the concept of Sefer Shemos. We call the book that we're reading now the Book of Shemos, the Book of Names. But it's very interesting to note that we're calling it the Book of Names. However, the whole beginning of the Sefer, we don't even talk about names, right? We have Vayelech Ish Mei Beis Levi, Vayikach Es Bas Levi. We have a man from Shevet Levi taking a daughter from Shevet Levi. We have Bas Paro, she doesn't have a name, right? We have these ladies, Shifra and Pua. Those are not their names. So a Sefer that's called Names does not even discuss anything about names. And he says, what is this so? Why is this so? He says, because what's the ultimate galus? What's the ultimate exile? It's the loss of a name. It's when a person is nameless. Because we said before, ladies, what is a person's name? It's their essence. It's who they are. It reveals their strengths. It reveals their qualities. It reveals their tchunas hanefesh. And so when a person forgets their name, when they forget who they are, that's the ultimate galus. That's when a Jew is really lost. And what's the ultimate geula? Mashiach, right? He says Mashiach stands for Chai Shem. When the name is alive, when we remember who we are, when we remember our name and our essence and our tafkid, that is the ultimate geula. So I think when we look back at the story of Dina, I think there's a lot we can take from it. And we have to remember that we have to discover who we are. What are our tchunot? Dina was a yatzanit. She was Bas Leah. We have to and Yaakov, he said, he was the Midas HaEmes. He was quiet. And Shimon and Levi, they were zealous. They were the ones who were destined to become the teachers of Klal Yisrael. We have to find out who we are, what are our tchunot, and we have to use them properly and remember to ultimately channel them towards the ultimate good of Klal Yisrael.